Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another cigar stream. I was considering doing tonight the second part of the Jordan Peterson rewrite, but I decided against doing that because, well, basically I got sidetracked. For some reason, I stayed up all night last night watching left-wing comedians. I watched Jon Stewart, who I've come to realise I hate with passion. Jon Stewart is one of the worst people ever born, I would say. I was watching Larry David clips. I was watching all sorts of different left-wing comedians, Frankie Boyle, just to see, you know, what they're up to. And then I went down a bit of a rabbit hole watching Stuart Lee stuff, which gave me the idea of doing this stream, because it struck me that one of the absolute top weapons, if not the top weapon, that the left have is in fact their comedians, and the dominance that and the influence that comedians have on opinion formation. I think this is especially true in this country, and it has been. Lots of you will have normie mates whose views on politics are essentially just straightforward copies of, you know, some comedian that they've seen on a panel show. And it struck me while I was watching all of these left-wing comedians last night that, you know, I thought, well, I could do all of them. You know, I could look at all of them. But then I thought, well, the thing is that lots of these comedians aren't very good. Like Frankie Boyle, for example, as just one example, you know, his material from the past few years is just awful. It's just ineffective, poor. I don't know if he's kind of winning anyone over who isn't already on side. It's not clever enough, that sort of material. And, you know, I've always been a Stuart Lee fan. I was a fan of Lee and Herring back in the 90s. Also, Stuart Lee is routinely described as, you know, the best stand-up comedian in the world, or one of the best stand-up comedians in the world. So I thought, well, why not let's take an in-depth look at, the creme de la creme, the best that the left have to offer, essentially, which in this country is certainly Stuart Lee. In America, somebody actually asked me said on Twitter that there's no American equivalent of Stuart Lee. I would say that the closest person to Stuart Lee in America, even though he's a lot more mainstream success than Stuart Lee, is Larry David. They share a kind of basic misanthropy. They share a kind of willingness to criticize their own team, if that makes any sense. They also do, they have other things in common as well, like deconstruction of comedic tropes and things like that, kind of postmodernism. So, yeah. So if I was to do an American version of this, probably Larry David would be the person I'd look at. Although it's a bit more difficult because, of course, he doesn't really do stand-up in the same way that Stuart Lee does. So everything is mediated through, you know, a kind of sitcom scenario in the Larry David world, through something like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where you can always argue, well, Larry David, the character, is not Larry David, the real man, something like this. Anyway, before I get going, I will say that I will probably do, the Jordan Peterson stream, if not tomorrow at some point, I'll do it next Monday. But I have reactivated the merit code to promote. I mean, honestly, people's logic skills and writing skills are now probably the worst that I've ever seen them online. Like the ability to construct basic arguments or to follow, you know, basic logic from A to B is basically an all-time low. I see non-sequitur arguments on a daily basis, and this is from like people who follow me. So really, you know, I'm still on my one-man mission to try to sort this out while also paying the bills. So I have reactivated the merit code. It should work between now and whenever I do that Jordan Peterson stream, and then it will stop working the minute that stream is over. So it's promo code MERIT for 25% off.
Merit, pure merit, such merit. Merit, such merit. Merit, such merit. Merit, such.
So yeah, the merit code works for the time being. All right, so Stuart Lee then, who is he? If you've never heard of him, I'll just show you a picture of his face here, and some notes that I've made. People who follow me on Twitter, I tweeted this out and said you can kind of keep this as a bingo card. I've put together an hour and almost 2 hour show reel here that we're going to watch through together, and I'm going to pause it and comment on various different things he does. But Stuart Lee was part of a double act in the 90s called Lee and Herring. Maybe one day I'll do a Deepest Lore on the shows that they did back then, because they are interesting in their own right. But since about 2000, 2001, they have gone their own separate ways, and they each have kind of their own stand-up career. I think it's fair to say that Stuart Lee, of the two of them, has been the one to go on to greater success, although Herring has had his own successes. And he, how can I describe Stuart Lee? He's probably, he's like a kind of ultimate Gen X Daria, if I ever want to put it that way. He's very much in that Gen X sardonic, ironic mode, as you'll see when we start watching clips of him. He's you know, typically is deconstruct. He's always deconstructing things and kind of poking fun at everyday life and you know, social norms and things like that. But he's also, as we'll get onto, and this is why I'm looking at this, this is why I'm looking at him in particular for this stream, he's also extremely left-wing. You know, he writes a regular column at the Guardian, and in terms of his political views, straightforwardly, I would say, normie left-wing. Yet, he's got this way of approaching the topics, I think, that serve, you know, they basically serve to bolster regime values in a way that is always oriented toward against the Tory party, which is something that a lot of left-wing comedians do. They get to be quote-unquote anti-system or anti-power simply by virtue of the fact that the Tory party exists. Yeah, so he's always critical of the Tory party and things like that. So, I think this is actually a common thing to the left in, or you know, in America and in certainly in Canada. I saw Dave the Distributist tweet something out about how for the past 30 years, all of the problems in Canada come down to the, you know, to their right wing, and basically that's what the left do in this country. So, what's interesting though? What's interesting about Lee's, how can I say, basic disposition is that he will spot a lot of the things that have gone wrong in modern culture, or a lot of the, he'll draw attention to a lot of the same things that we would, right? But he's coming from the polar opposite end. I mean, we look at the modern world as living in the ashes, you know, as a state of decline, as a place where there's no community anymore, where people are atomized. And basically, as far as I can tell, Stuart Lee signs up to all of that. He would agree with most of what I've just said there. Yet for him, the cause of that goes back to Thatcherism, goes back, you know, it's all at the door of the Tory party, right? He doesn't draw a connection between kind of left-wing egalitarian values and the total state of the country, he put it down to, the Tories taking away welfare from people, giving tax breaks to the rich, screwing over the poor, like, you know, it's classic kind of left-wing talking points. Yet you end up in a weird way, you end up in the same place. It's just that he's laying the blame, with a different set of people than we would. So what are some standard Stuart Lee tactics to look out for? And I will start soon because there's a lot of stuff to get through. This is going to be a long stream, ladies and gentlemen, so strap in. It's going to be a 3-hour horn without doubt, maybe even longer. So first, he's openly elitist and he sneers at his own audience. Sound familiar, anyone? Does that sound familiar? And this I think is why he's a figure of fascination for me personally, because I would say that I share a basic disposition with Stuart Lee, despite being on the polar opposite end of the political spectrum from him. He describes himself as centre-left. I would say he's further left than that, to be honest. I describe myself as a sensible centrist. Anybody who follows his channel knows where my politics really are, right? And yet, I am also elitist, and I also am pretty sneering about plebs and everyday people and so on. So that is something that I have in common. And I think that a lot of people who follow this channel will also have that in common with both me and Stuart Lee, because people tend to pick up followings of individuals who are somewhat like themselves. So this is a kind of interesting exercise for us, I think, because Stuart Lee puts himself kind of above the fray of normal culture to look down on it and to comment on it and to deconstruct it. And in a way, what I'm trying to do in this stream is to take one step above that again and to look down on Stuart Lee and to try to deconstruct him. It's a kind of interesting exercise. And one which I'm sure Stuart Lee would not expect to exist, because in Stuart Lee's mind, everyone who's right wing is a bloody dribbling moron, right? And in his mind, and in most left wingers' minds, there is no right wing intelligentsia or intellectual. We just don't exist. And one of the reasons for that is, of course, because they are not people like us have no seat at the mainstream table. As we're about to see, the people who kind of are allowed to have a quote-unquote right-wing voice in the kind of, what do they call it, the public square or whatever, are people like Darren Grimes, or people like bloody Tom Harwood, or Jeremy Clarkson or somebody, right? Or Tory politicians, are people who we, on our side of things, would see as being controlled opposition, essentially. I have written essays before talking about political kayfabe and how many of the mainstream right figures, including the Tory party in general, and all of their kind of media apparatus, like GB News and bloody Daily Telegraph and so on, are basically jobbers who exist to be destroyed by people like Stuart Lee. Right, so the system is set up in a way to give a man like Stuart Lee absolute slam dunks, cheap and easy wins. Okay, in much the same way that, like, in these spaces, it'd be like me, making videos every week where, do you remember when people used to like go and slam dunk on like SJWs, do you remember those days where people would just laugh, point and laugh at SJWs, like the kind of most stupid of the left, and you can get some fat blue haired SJW feminist, and you just point at them and poke fun, and they're just easy slam dunks. And what I'm saying is that the system is set up in such a way almost to give intelligent left-wing people, of which Lee is obviously one, easy wins. And also wins that never get them to challenge or question their own kind of assumptions, which is something that we'll see. So anyway, that's the first thing that Lee does. He's elitist and sneers at his own audience. Second, he savagely mocks and criticizes other comedians and therefore can present himself as above or in some way beyond the mainstream. And I've actually got a section where I've got Lee like criticizing mainstream comedians like BBC One or ITV comedian. You know, I think I've got him dunking on Ben Elton, Russell Howard, Frankie Boyle and Jimmy Carr. Those are the four ones he has a go at. And also, who's that one who does like the big stadium? I forget his name now. Mike something. Who's that observational comedian? Michael McIntyre, is it? Michael McIntyre, right. So, in a way, Lee can kind of buy himself credibility and kudos by breaking that unofficial rule of having a go at his other comedians. You'll notice in kind of showbiz land, you don't get people criticizing each other anymore. I remember a couple of nights back, I stumbled on that video of Morrissey, George Michael and Tony Blackburn talking about Joy Division and New Order back in 1984. Amazing clip, by the way, if you haven't seen it. But it struck me that what was really unusual about that is that all three of them basically dissed Joy Division and New Order. Like none of the, like Morrissey was like, yeah, I don't really like Joy Division, to be honest. They're a bit shit. People wouldn't say that now because it's bad PR. And, you know, social media would be ablaze with, oh, Morrissey at war with New Order or something like that. That didn't happen back in 84 because people were allowed to have opinions about things. Whereas in our culture, like, let's pretend that one of those means, you know, Frankie Boyle said something about Rob Brydon. That would then be a story of Rob Brydon's being dissed by Frankie Boyle. Whereas Lee, he kind of exists in a space where he doesn't have to play that game. And I think that buys him a bit of credibility with the kind of comedy crowd. Because I think a lot of his crowd are comedy people who are into comedy purists in a way. So, yes, that's an interest. That's a vital part of what gives him this position within kind of left-wing comedy circles, I guess. Also, if Stuart Lee had a go at Frankie Boyle, I think Boyle would just take it on the chin because Lee is above him in the within the kind of left-wing comedy world or whatever, right? Third, he is disdainful of modern culture and of youth culture, despite appearing to defend all the left-wing values that created them. And I've got a whole section where I've actually structured this in such a way that we're going to get to know Lee a little bit. We're going to get to see some of his social and his cultural stuff. And then in the second half, we're going to get to his politics and how the same tactics he uses in the social cultural side of things, he then brings into talking about politics and then kind of deconstructing right-wing views and making them seem like absurd on their face and things like that. Another thing that Lee does is he starts to deconstruct his own performances as well as the crowd in the room. This is a typical kind of Stuart Lee thing where he'll be in the middle of saying something and then he'll stop and then he'll draw attention to how he structured it and then he'll start to pick on various bits of the room. I think I've got some examples of him doing that in here as well. Most of his routines are postmodern and ironic, drawing attention to comedy tropes. So, you know, in just the same way that Quentin Tarantino movies are movies about movies, Stuart Lee's comedy is often comedy about comedy and about how comedy works. This is a kind of interesting thing because it means there's this kind of distance between the actual content of what he's saying and the form. And there's always this kind of ambiguous tension between those two things in Lee, right? Penultimately, he revels in the extent to which he is hated by the tabloid right and even internalizes their criticisms in a self-aware way. I would say this is actually part of his identity and his kind of self-consciously constructed identity as, but like, he just loves it. He, you know, if he gets like a bad review from the Sun or something, he'll just be like, he'll wear that as a badge of honor. In other words, he's happy to play the heel to the quote unquote right. Okay. You know, if people are getting like outraged by him or whatever, he's actually getting the reaction that he wants. Something to, he's kind of aware of that dialectical win, if you want, which is another thing I've talked about a lot that makes the, these things are actually powerful tools. They have like great destructive power. And they also have a power to kind of keep the people who are into these sorts of things within their ideological bubble, if you want, like not questioning any of their own assumptions. And then finally, as I mentioned, he scores cheap and easy points by factually, often correctly, by the way, pointing out the fakery of many silly claims made by right-wing rent-a-gobs. In other words, he destroys jobbers, right? And I would say that this last point is really important because as long as that fake right around the Tory party and all of its apparatus exists, okay? And I'm talking about an entire kind of network and organism, if you want, that pumps out bollocks all the time, it's going to carry on giving left-wing types very easy outs from actually facing. Because what one of my frustrations with a lot of the left-wing comedians' ways of dealing with the problems that we are all concerned about is that they always play them down and they always find a way of explaining them away or showing them to be a lie in some way, right? And, of course, all of you watching this know that the social, cultural and political issues facing all of our countries aren't imaginary. And the concerns that, quote-unquote, populists have are concerns about the futures of their countries and of their children's countries. But these are very flippantly dismissed by these comedians. And I think they're flippantly dismissed because they're given easy, easy outs by Tories, number one, and by the sort of vapid twats that are given platforms on GB News. Right, and that's why I've started. I'm going to start with a clip made by a left wing YouTube channel using Stuart Lee to dunk on Darren Grimes. Okay, so this is like a talk about meta. This is going to be a comment from me commenting on a guy commenting on Stuart Lee reacting to sorts of points made by Darren Grimes, okay? And then there's going to be a whole bunch of other Lee bits after that I'll comment on. All right, I hope you're sitting comfortably. I will hit play.
The final, well, penultimate Darren Grimes video on this channel. It's Darren Grimes month here on Anti-Social Media. And if I have any spare time, I'm going to reduce my 45-minute downfall video to around 5 minutes long for people who cannot be asked to watch the whole thing. And if you're one of the handful of people who've watched my series of videos about Darren's new Saturday show, then you know that me and Crafty have something in common.
See, this is really interesting here, right? Because what we're watching, okay, This is a really interesting thing. The left and the far left and us have in common are essentially we both hate these people that we're seeing here, right? We have in common the view that these people are fucking idiots. We all know this, right? I guess they don't know that we exist, for one. And if they did, they'd be horrified, by the way. And they'd pretend that we didn't exist because it's easier to dunk on these guys, right? But for us, these people are in the way. These people actually exist to block any genuine, proper right-wingery in the country. Because, you know, they're fake. These people are fake opposition, as we know. And I think this clip I'm about to play perfectly demonstrates how somebody like Darren Grimes serves up cheap and easy wins for the regime, for the left, making it making all of us look like twats in the process, by the way, and, you know, bolstering the profile of a man like Stuart Lee.
Which is a very low viewership indeed. His latest addition to YouTube has got less than 3,000 views in just under 24 hours, which is pathetic for a man and a news station that relies on viral clips and incendiary rhetoric to bring people towards them. And the show keeps changing, just as I predicted, to make the poor presenters look a little bit better, right? For example, YouTube clips of the presenters used to be about 8 minutes long, which included the one-minute monologue they did, and then other panellists basically tearing apart everything that presenter has said in their monologue. Now, they've reduced these videos down to just the monologue, so there's no actual pushback from other people in the studio. This is presumably to attract more gammon to the station with the big titles like, I'm English, and whatever it is today. But that plan has already failed miserably.
Just to explain what's going on, this is a left-wing YouTube channel called Antisocial Media, who is commenting on Darren Grimes, the GB News presenter, who is right-wing, or quote-unquote right-wing, regime right-wing, and he uses Stuart Lee to kind of poke fun at Darren Grimes. And what I'm doing is I am analysing all of that as a kind of YouTube inception.
Less than 3,000 views. Jesus. Not only that, but Darren has inadvertently owned himself by unironically turning himself into a stand-up routine by liberal, woke, commie, snowflake Stuart Lee. Let's have a look to see how embarrassing Darren can get in just 60 seconds as he explains we should be proud to be English. Now you're about to see the two monologues compared, starting with a snippet of Stuart Lee, followed by a snippet of Darren, followed by Stuart Lee, followed by Darren, and so on, with a few interjections from me. And
a few interjections from me, friends. You see? Inception. This is like, come on. I'm taking deconstruction to the next level, Stuart, if you ever watch this.
I don't know if you noticed yet, but the sound quality on my end is a bit poorer than usual because I'm not using the proper microphone because I can't be arsed. Sorry. Let's start with Stuart Lee.
So I was in a cab on a Sunday night going from Waterloo to Hackney, and suddenly the cab driver turned round and his opening conversational gambit was to say this genuine sentence. He said, "These days you get arrested and thrown in jail if you say you're English, don't you?" Look, we've all done it. You're probably like me. Sometimes a cab driver, someone might say something like that and you go, yeah, you know, just for a quiet life. Or if they go, "My face is made out of electricity and ham," you go, "Yes, it's awful when that happens. My friend had that, an electric ham face." Or if they go, "All mice are gay and they're from space, aren't they?" You go, "Yeah, they're bloody gay space mice. I can't stand them. They make me physically sick." You're just, you know, for a quiet life. But on this occasion, I thought, I wonder what he means. I said to him, "What did you say?" And he said, "Oh, these days, if you say you're English, you get arrested and thrown in jail." I said, "When did this come in?" And he said, "No, if you say you're English these days, mate, you get arrested and thrown in jail." I said, if you say you're English, you get arrested and thrown in jail." He goes, "Yeah, these days," he said. "If you say you're English, you get arrested and..."
This is another Stuart Lee trope, by the way, which is endless repetition to the point where the audience is starting to feel uncomfortable. I don't know if I read that. I forgot to read the bit about the endless repetition, but
you'll be just thrown in jail.
So there is a forgotten, nay, a forbidden word that means more to me than any other, and that word is England. That's from Sir Winston Churchill, not my mouth, unfortunately, but I think he was absolutely spot on.
Now, what happens now after this Winston Churchill bit is Darren follows the same pattern as him and all the other presenters have done on GB News in this section, right, which is talking about stuff that isn't relevant to the subject. Okay, they've only got 1 minute, but they still need to pad it out by just talking about random shit. Okay, and I'll show you exactly what comes next. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to speed it up so that we can actually get to Darren's main point. But instead of wading through his bullshit, we're just going to swim very fast through it, okay?
He would look at this country right now and be distraught at the fact that we wax lyrical about how great it is that Scotland has a parliament, the Welsh Assembly, and all the rest of it.
You can talk about Scottishness, you can talk about being Welsh, you can talk about being Irish, but if you dare mention your Englishness, you are a racist, a horrendous bigot. You must never speak of it.
I said, in jail. He goes, yeah, these days. These days, mate, if you say you're English, right, these days, you will get arrested and you'll be thrown in jail. I said, if you be thrown, just actually thrown in jail, just if you say you're English. He goes, yeah, these days. Say you're English these days, you'll be thrown in, arrested, and then you'll...
Do you get the point? This is such an easy win for the left. Such an easy win. Darren Grimes is obviously cringe. Stuart Lee comes across as being correct and rational.
You'll be thrown in jail. I said, you'll actually be thrown in jail. He goes, yeah. I said, just for saying you're English. He goes, yeah, say you're English these days. You get arrested and you'll be thrown in jail. I said, you'll be thrown in jail if you just say, just for saying you're English. He goes, yes, that you will. These days, he said, if you say you're English, you'll be arrested and you'll be thrown. I said, you're absolutely... what you're saying, if you say you're English these days, you'll be arrested and thrown in jail. He goes, yes, these days. If you say you're English, you just say that, and you'll be arrested and you'll be thrown in jail. I said, you'll be thrown in a jail, just if you're saying...
But if you dare mention your Englishness, you are a racist, a horrendous bigot. You must never speak of it. And I say to hell with that. England is a great country. I am intensely proud to be from England. We gave the world Shakespeare. We've given the world so much that we should be so intensely proud of.
Darren is so proud of being English that during a scripted monologue, which he wrote and presumably practiced at least once, in front of a mirror, if he's not doing anything else in front of the mirror, and he can only think of one example of why he's proud to be English. Not a single example from any years that he's been alive, for example, nothing from recent times, one example, and that's Shakespeare.
And I want to hear more about that. So tomorrow, I urge you folks, be like me, fly your flag, be loud, be proud, because it's about time that the English, like all four constituent parts of our country, were loud and proud.
Woof, well, we could take a breath now, Darren.
Jesus Christ. So, yeah, I thought I'd start with that because we don't need to watch the whole thing, but... I thought it was a good example of the sort of easy wins that the regime offers up to people like this. All right, so let's get to know some Lee clips. I'll just let this.
I got a no-star review in the Daily Telegraph. I did. The bloke said, normally they give you one for turning up. The bloke said... I have contempt for the public, and if I understood anything about the sacrifices people make to come and see things, I would spare them my toxic scorn. And I do understand all that, and I just did it for a laugh, really. Which is within the remit of this job, isn't it? If you think about it for a second.
You cited a...
That's another kind of interesting thing. about comedians, which is that because it's their job to be funny, and because they can play with irony, and because there's no expectation of a comedian to be kind of fully coherent in some respect, they can be ambiguous about all sorts of things, they're almost beyond criticism. It's kind of hard. If you want to start trying to criticize a comedian, it's like pinning down jelly in a way. Like someone like Lee can always say, well, I was just having, you know, it was just a joke. So that is something else that gives, I think, comedians a special power. And it's an under, people talk about the need to make culture and so on and so forth. I think comedy in general, certainly on this kind of, I mean, there's a whole generation of people who were just like addicted to those panel shows and like Dave and things like that, who basically just get all their views from that sort of thing. So I do think this is an exercise worth doing. But let us now have a look at Lee criticising some other comedians.
Talked about Jimmy Carr and Frankie Boyle. What I think's difficult about them is that I think they both really, really like jokes. And that's obviously a good thing for a comedian. But I think they both start with a punchline and they work back to a setup. Neither of them seem to have a coherent worldview. So what's confusing about Frankie Boyle is one minute...
People asking, does he ever criticise Islam? There is a whole bit that I've included here where he talks about exactly that. He's got like a whole bit designed around this idea that he doesn't criticise Islam. So we'll get to that when we get to it.
Making fun of a handicapped child. The next minute he'll be doing something about Israeli occupation of Palestine. It seems to take some extreme like left-wing position. So it doesn't seem to be a same with Jimmy Carr. It doesn't seem to be a coherent position. So therefore you don't know what you're supposed to take as truth and what you're supposed to take as irony. The reason there isn't a coherent position is because it's all about getting a laugh rather than about having a point of view or a consistent personality. Their acts aren't informed by a personality or a worldview. That means they cut down really well into short slots on telly. They cut down really well into Twitter, into tweets. They cut down really well into being like on some page in a lads mag or whatever. And you know, and that's you could argue that's the job of a professional comedian. I'm going to shout out some questions now. I need you to answer loudly to them. The answer to most of them is yes. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Who likes alcohol?
Yeah.
Louder. Who likes sweets?
Yeah.
Who likes cream cakes?
Yeah.
Who likes their favourite food, whatever it is?
Yeah.
Who likes Ben Elton? Oh, it's no one. Okay, here's another one. Who likes The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Who likes Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Who likes their favourite fictional character from their own childhood?
Yeah.
Who likes their own beloved mother?
Yeah.
Who likes Ben Elton? Oh, it's no one again. Okay, here's no one. Who likes snowflakes?
Yeah.
Who likes sunshine?
Yeah.
Who likes the universal concept of eternal peace and happiness?
Yeah.
Who likes Osama bin Laden? Yeah. Yeah. Who likes Ben Elton? Oh, it's no one again. It's fucking weird. It's weird. That is weird. I must have done that 30 or 40 times, right? And every time, without any element of manipulation, more people like Osama bin Laden, a multiple murderer, than Ben Elton. I think, why would more people like Osama bin Laden than Ben Elton? I think it's because when you compare the two of them, compared to Ben Elton, Osama bin Laden has at least lived his life to a consistent set of ethical principles. Because... yeah, clap, let him hear you. So, because people hate Ben Elton. Every now and again, a journalist has the courage to ask him why this is. I've seen it happen twice in print. And once on Parkinson, Parkin said to him, he said to Ben Elton, why do you think everyone hates you? And Ben Elton said, he did. And Ben Elton said, well, Michael, it's because in this country, people don't like success. But he was wrong about it.
Can I just say that the line about Osama bin Laden having a consistent set of ethical principles is low key based. I just wanted to put that out there.
The real answer is much more simple. It's just that in this country, people don't like Ben Elton. And they don't hate him through the kind of conduit of the notion of success. They hate him entirely on his own terms. because of who he is and the bad things that he's done. And I think if you're my age, you can kind of understand why it is, because if you're over 35, you'll remember before alternative comedy, when you'd watch comedians and it had no kind of relevance to you, you didn't understand what they were talking about or who they were, and then the young ones came along and all that with Ben Elton, and you felt, oh, at last, something for us. And then, of course, over the years, Ben Elton's changed. He's worked with Queen, who were one of the British bands that broke the cultural embargo on South Africa under apartheid. He's worked with Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's worse than that. And, and a song that they co-wrote was performed at the inauguration of George Bush. And when questioned about it, Ben Elton said he didn't see it so much as a celebration of George Bush as a celebration of the President of the United States of America. But, of course, they're the same thing. That's why that argument doesn't work. Observational comedy.
All right, so if people are watching this back, the stream got suspended briefly. It'll come back. It'll come back. We'll rip on. Stay there. Put the kettle on. It'll come back. We've had this before. It'll come back. Just, I don't know when. Let's lay it up in a different way, shall we? Let's have a look. We'll lay it up in a different way. Stupid copyright nonsense. It will come back, yeah. It will come back. We're just waiting for the stream to come back in. It'll come back in. Just waiting for it to come back in. Do-do-do-do. It's come back. Yeah. It takes like 5 minutes. Time out. We've had this before. Are we back yet? Are we back? We're back. All right, I may have to be a bit more careful then. Stop it a bit more and talk a bit more. Otherwise the silly robots get us. Okay. So let's watch a bit more. And what I'll do is I'll skip past these. I'll dump the long video I've made, and we'll just watch particular bits. So here is a bit of his. I'm going to have a look at some of his social stuff now, where you can actually see him kind of breaking down aspects of modern life and making kind of. He'd hate to be called an observational comedian, but it will. you'll be able to see in these clips how he can intelligently deconstruct something that you recognize, and you'll say, well, you know, he's making kind of essentially true points about things. And then I will play some political stuff. If the stream... Oh, fuck's sake, why am I glitching? Oh, I hate doing this. Just work, for God's sake. Why is it glitching? Ah, fucking hell. Stop fucking moaning, twat. Right. Now, let's play... So, just to explain again, because I don't know how much audio you missed, I'm going to play some of his social and cultural kind of commentary so you can see how he can intelligently break something down in a way, on kind of a... on a level where you may agree with him, and then we'll have a look at some of how he uses some of these same tactics when he then gets into more political material elsewhere. Okay, so this is just a little bit about the shop, The Works, which I actually was in a couple of days ago because I had to buy some like a coloring book for AAA.
But most places, just they're all the same now. They just...
Going on about the bloody roboting.
But most places are just... they're all the same now. They just... there's an old bit that was like a Victorian slum. That's now the bit everyone wants to live in. Then there's a 70s bit that was the bit everyone liked in the 70s. That's now the bit everyone hates. And in that bit, there's a Poundland, a super drug, and a branch of The Works.
So, can people hear me? For God's sake, stop moaning! What is it that what is it that's open? That is. What is it that's annoying you? Right, now let's carry on.
In every town. And The Works, to be honest, that's the only thing to me that's interesting about travelling around Britain now, going in The Works. Because you never have any idea what's going to be in The Works. Sort of stopped at random. It's nominally a bookshop, but it appears to be run by people who have a deep-seated suspicion of books.
So if you're American and you don't know what The Works is, it's basically exactly as he just described it. That is exactly what it is. It's a kind of weird place that sells like books and maybe like some stationery and a few toys and things like that.
And they'll do anything they can to stock anything other than a book. You go in The Works. Is this a bookshop? Yes. Have you got this new Ragnarok by A.S. Byer? It's won loads of awards. No. Have you got this new book, Savage Continent, about the aftermath of World War II? It's been... No. Have you got any novels? Dan Rhodes, he's got a new novel out, a novelist, everyone thinks he's good. No.
I mean, they're much more likely to have something like James Corden's autobiography or like something like that, you know?
Have you got a triple pack of 1930s Belgian horror films? A 1998 Richard Bacon calendar.
So that is basically very true. I'm now aware of the stupid YouTube streaming policies where, my expert deconstruction of these clips I'm playing is going to be interrupted at any moment. Anyway, here's another bit. I won't play them all. In the light of the draconian, bring back Susan. Where's Susan? I want her stiletto back on my temple. The tyranny of Mohan knows no bounds. Anyway, here is Lee now on another on another, like, a cultural thing that he spotted.
Customers now whose needs must be met, and the best
Right, you're saying it's a mic cable. I might just fucking stop this stream. I've had enough. Where is it? Gordon Bennett. I don't know, I've got perfect bandwidth. Right, I'm stopping this fucking stream now. I'm going. I've had enough. Too much fucking moaning.
But we're all customers now whose needs must be met. And the best example of this customer mentality, I think, I saw on the guest book of the TripAdvisor Holiday Review website. Now, I've got a 10-year-old boy, and he's a massive Doctor Who fan. And his favourite Doctor Who thing is not the multi-billion pounds Doctor Who world place in Cardiff Bay. It's a little museum in the cramped two-room cellar of a little cottage in the square of the Herefordshire market town of Bromyard. And this cellar is full of the eccentric owner's mad collection of Doctor Who props and costumes and sets all crammed in there. It's called the Time Machine Doctor Who Museum. And all around Bromyard, there's posters of the TARDIS. It says, the Time Machine Doctor Who Museum. And it is made abundantly clear that the Time Machine...
By the way, I'm talking to make sure that this doesn't get swiped by the dark hand of Mohan again. But I kind of like his set here. His set is like a kind of ashes of the 20th century. Very much kind of surrounded by the Gen X trappings of a kind of useless DVD collection, useless CD collection, you know, books that nobody cares about anymore, you know. All kind of quite relatable for people my age and older.
Museum is an entirely Doctor Who based museum. But there is a 1-star review of this Doctor Who museum on TripAdvisor. And it says, the Time Machine Doctor Who Museum has very limited appeal except for Doctor Who fans. We were in and out in 25 minutes, and that was after going round twice. They went round twice. They went round once, and they couldn't believe how little non-Doctor Who content there was in the Doctor Who Museum. Thought if they went round again, they might see a diorama of the life of Isambard Kingdom Brunel or an interactive display of the mating cycle of the Asian short-clawed otter. It's a Doctor Who museum. You can't complain that there was too much Doctor Who stuff in the Doctor Who museum. It's not aimed at you. Not everything's aimed at you.
See, that's a point that Mr. D makes all the time. Not everything is aimed at you.
Reminds me of an elderly relative who, on having gone to see Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Cats, complained to me afterwards that she hadn't been expecting it all to be just about cats. And a person under 40 came up to me after a gig and he said to me, I didn't really enjoy that, to be honest, mate. And I said, I don't know what you expect me to do about it. You just paid to see me, and I am me.
So there we go. That's the sort of stuff, the kind of social commentary side of things. He's got a little bit here that I think is quite interesting for all of us to consider on social media. Here's a little bit. I won't play all of these because now I'm super paranoid about getting sniped by Mohan again. But let's watch a few of these and then we'll get to the political stuff soon.
But we've turned away, it would seem to me, from the wider world
Everyone's looking inwards, back through their own boundaries, back through their own borders. And you have to pay for everything now. And nothing comes for free, except the last U2 album.
So, yeah, it seems like when I open my... It's File Explorer. It's File Explorer that's causing my robot issues. Whenever I open a new file, it's causing something. Do you see this PC is one of the most powerful PCs available to man, and yet it can't handle opening a bloody file without sending my mic into spasms. So, yeah, it's a Windows issue. It's a Windows issue. So.
Whether you wanted it or not, you know, like the Trojan virus.
Well, I don't really...
It's not that day. This actually did happen. Anybody with an iPhone was given a free copy of U2. New album. This was like a couple of years ago. I don't know when that happened, but it was like two, three years ago. They gave us all a free U2 album.
You know what I'm supposed to say to any of you now, because you all live in a reflecting hall of digital mirrors made of Facebooks and Twitters and Snapchats and Instagrams and Deliveroos and selfies and WhatsApps. You're the kind of people who were run over by a bus because you were crossing the road whilst looking at a bus timetable app. And they say you shouldn't keep dolphins in concrete tanks because the endless sound of their own sonar bouncing back at them eventually drives them mad, like someone locked in an aluminium-lined cell, listening to an endless loop of every ill-considered 2 a.m. tweet they ever sent out. And that is you. You are the mental dolphins of now.
You see, I mean, he is making some good points, I would say. He's making some good points about, you know, well, I mean, we call it doom scrolling, but he's essentially saying, you know, similar things.
Inward looking, self-obsessed people with no attention span, hurling yourselves fatally out of your tanks in the self-inflicted wounds of your imagined democratic choices. And it's no surprise to me that you've all gone mad. Because you've all got phones on you all the time, haven't you? With cameras. And you all take photos all the time, don't you, of your face. Over and over again. Your face. Yeah. Your face. Your face. Your face. Why? Surely you all know what your own faces look like now. And your entire online digital history is just an endless succession of images of your face, obscuring an endless succession of things that are all more interesting than your face.
Correct.
Here's me at Stonehenge. Here's me at the Taj Mahal. Here's me at the Deacon Blue reunion concert. And I don't know what I'm supposed to say to you, or what anyone is supposed to say to anyone, because nothing that anyone could ever have to say could possibly be as interesting as the ongoing, moment-by-moment documentation of your entire lives.
So all of that is, I think, basically correct analysis of current stuff. What else have we got? I'm just waiting for people to stop saying I'm roboting. So, this bit here is basically a kind of Stuart Lee's version of my rants against Zoomers, which I'll play a little bit of. I won't play it all, but I'll play a little bit of this in the interests of anti-Zoomer posting.
Oh, hang on a minute, mate. Who's the sole arbiter of taste in stand-up comedy? Who's the self-appointed moral judge of right and wrong in stand-up comedy?
It's me, I am! It's been me for about 17 years now, and there's nothing the passive-aggressive indifference of the people of Southend-on-Sea can do about that. Not now.
But hey, the world's gone mad, hasn't it? Do you know what? I blame young people, by which I mean people under 40, and I hope there's none in.
I'm under 40. I'm disillusioned. I like Russell Brand. I didn't vote. Yeah. Oh no, I've got no future now. I've got this phone.
That's all. It's basically all of you. Basically all of you is this. I mean, this goes on for quite a long time, to be honest, but it's kind of quite funny. All right, we'll move. I won't play it all, but that just goes on and on, that one. Let's have a look at this one. Okay, we'll wait for it to come. It's another thing that happens, by the way, is that when I first add these, they spaz out a little bit, and then I can play them.
My second favourite celebrity hardback is this. This is a book called My Dangerous Life with So Solid Crew, and it's by a man called Asher D. He was in Grange Hill, and he's one of these rappers they have now, the rap singers. I don't know if you've seen them. Yeah, you've seen them about, the rap singers. Yeah.
I'm just pausing it to stop BBC complaining. That's all.
So you've seen the rap singers on the Top of the Pops, they have them, don't they? They used to come on there, didn't they, the rappers, the rap singers come on the Top of the Pops. You've seen them on there. There'd be a young woman singing, and then one of the rappers would come on and they'd talk and do a little dance. You've seen them, the rap singers on the... on the Top of the Pops now.
Has it gone again? What's happened? Bloody hell, this isn't working. I tell you what I should have done. You'll hear this on the replay. I can't play the BBC ones. That's what it is. The ones from the BBC are too hot with all of this stuff. So we just have to wait again. It'll come back. It'll come back. To do. It'll come back. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know it's live on Twitter, but it'll come back. Don't worry about it. It's what it is that the BBC ones, that these ones were shown on the BBC. And as a result of being shown on the BBC, they were, they're just a bit hotter. Yeah, they attack the throat, exactly. It'll come back. It just steams out for 5 minutes. I'm going to go and get a Pepsi Max. Bloody hell. Right, am I back? Can you hear me? Right, I've got my Pepsi Max. The trouble is that it's the BBC it is that those clips I was showing are from, they were shown on the BBC, and it's the BBC's algo that is picking up on those clips super quickly. So I'm not going to be able to play them. What I should have done, but could not be bothered to do, is I should have made this as a video and not as a stream. I should have done it as a fucking video and premiered it, but I just didn't have the time to do that, all right? So I've tried to do it live, and I've been punished by Mohan. That's what's happened. Anyway, let us persevere. If it happens again, I'll shut the stream down. But let us persevere. So anyway, that in that whole bit, he starts going through the book of the rapper Asher D, in which... In that book, he compares himself to Jesus. That's basically what happens in that particular bit. Okay. All right. So let's carry on.
But the out.
Do you know, tech issues are one of the worst things. They're one of the worst. They're one of the most annoying things that happens. But yes, Asher D from So Solid Crew compares himself to Jesus in that book. And Stuart Lee just pokes fun at Asher D from So Solid Crew and Grange Hill for doing that. This is a bit... Now, it seems like the bits from this particular gig, the content provider gig, and not getting as flagged as the BBC ones. So hopefully we'll be able to watch a bit more of this without getting sniped.
Metropolitan liberal elites, they...
Start again.
But the out-of-touch metropolitan liberal elites, they didn't see that Brexit vote coming, did they? The out-of-touch metropolitan liberal elites. Who are the metropolitan liberal elites? Well, according to Gary Bushell in the Daily Star, if you're in my audience, it's you. And never has that been less true than it is here tonight in Southend-on-Sea in a hive of racists. So... Who are the metropolitan liberal elite? The metropolitan liberal elite, I think, they're the sort of people who preferred the Labour Party in the 90s when they looked like a load of coke dealers at an advertising agency. As opposed to now, when they look like Cat Weasel and his army of furious tramps. Fighting each other to the death over the last bottle of Diamond White with a burning skip in a Lidl car park.
Quite an accurate description of Labour these days, to be fair. He is describing the Blair voter, isn't he? He's talking about the Blair voter.
But I live in London, in N16 North London, which is classic out-of-touch metropolitan liberal elite territory.
N16 North London. This is how out of touch the metropolitan liberal elite are where I live in North London. The weekend before the vote, the Brexit vote, bloke I vaguely know, he sent out a tweet and he said, "Don't worry about the Brexit vote," he said. "I've just been out for brunch in a gastro pub in Islington. And absolutely no one there is voting to leave." So in a way, they had it coming, didn't they? With their spiralizers. Yeah, the courgettes taste the same, don't they? Whatever shape they're... That tells you a lot about the room, doesn't it? Look, down here, amongst the elite, the spiralizer jokes are going, "Ah-ha!" And as we spread up there, friends of the theatre, "What is a spiralizer?" And then right at the top, some lone usher, "What's a courgette?" The joke... The joke failing on three levels. Three levels simultaneously. Only I can give you this triple simultaneous joke.
Do you remember my bingo card at the start? This is him. This is him deconstructing the joke, deconstructing his own audience now. If you don't know what a spiralizer is, by the way, it's one of those things where you can basically get like a carrot or a courgette or whatever, and you can kind of make pretty shapes with it, you know, out of your veg.
Failure there. So... But whatever your line of work, whatever your politics, you're going to be affected by the Brexit. I am a content provider, is my job, and I've spent the best part of three decades now travelling around the country, providing stand-up comedy content from a sort of centre-left liberal position. I've done very well out of it, I'm not going to lie, but the problem I've got now is how do you write a one-size-fits-all stand-up show to tour around divided Brexit Britain? It is very difficult, you know. You might have a joke Tuesday night, you're in Harrogate, Oxford, Cambridge, Glasgow, round of applause. Next night, Lincoln, glassed in the face by the mayor.
So, okay. I'm going to try to move into the political stuff now. This was all meant to be set up because I really wanted to get into political things, but we've been beset by problems. I'm now scared of playing the BBC clips. BBC clips. So let me see if I can find ones that are not BBC ones. Let's try this one where he's talking about Ricky Gervais. Let's try this one first of all. Hold on. So he is one of the things about Stuart Lee is that he's kind of an ardent defender of right, fucking native Scot. What are you saying? Where are you, native Scot? I can see you talking about robots, you fucking twat. Get out of here. Go on, native Scot. Bugger off back to Scotland, where you can play Hunger Games up there beyond Hadrian's Wall.
The problem with television, I think, is it's increasingly incapable of dealing with anything thoughtful or serious, yeah? And a good example of this was this time last year, the Celebrity Big Brother racism scandal. You remember that? There was an Indian woman in the house and... everyone picked on her. Now, it was awful, but I was kind of fascinated by it because it showed us how television can't cope with a serious thing. And I sort of loved the Celebrity Big Brother racism scandal for that. I loved it for three main reasons. Firstly, I loved the Celebrity Big Brother racism scandal because it meant that because of the bad racism, the show's official sponsors, the Carphone Warehouse, were contractually obliged to issue the following genuine press statement. This is a genuine press statement from the Carphone Warehouse. Racism is entirely at odds with the values of the Carphone Warehouse. entirely at odds. No, I don't know about you, Glasgow, but I was hugely relieved to read that press statement, because prior to reading that press statement, I had suspected that the Carphone Warehouse was in fact a front for a white supremacist organisation. And I have in my hand here a piece of paper bearing the true values of the Carphone Warehouse. The true values of the Carphone Warehouse. One, cell phones.
Oh, man.
Two, sell more phones. Three, deny the Holocaust. Four, sell more phones. Five, deny the Holocaust again. This time by texting your mates.
So, all right, you get the idea. You get the idea. Okay, let's find another one. This is one where he's talking about now Ricky Gervais.
Right, me.
And I have to...
Your politics is a bit of a stretch, is it not? For the current government to say that we live in a kind of woke dictatorship where you can't say anything, when the highest office in the land, the Prime Minister, has, with impunity, called Muslim women letterboxes, gay men tank-topped bum boys.
That is actually true.
Black people pickaninnies, all single mums unfit parents, and all kids born out of marriage, including presumably half a dozen of his own, ill-raised, ignorant and aggressive. If the politics doesn't work out for Boris Johnson, he can put all that stuff together into a tight 50-minute Netflix stand-up special.
So this is actually now where we're getting into some of the stuff I was saying at the start here, where... I think this, oh fuck's sake, just fuck off.